World Soccer Talk podcast. On this week's show, we discuss the Champions League morphing into the Super League. US Open Cup takes a giant leap forward. Marsh's situation at Leeds United. Fox hates streaming. And EA Sports and FIFA split up. Plus, we have all the answers and questions from you, the listeners. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnayar and Kyle Fansler. My name is Christopher Harris. All right, guys, there's a lot to get to. Kartik, we missed you last week, and I know you've been very busy. We'll start in one place and then move on from there. And that place is that I think probably Kyle and I, Kartik, over the last couple of weeks have watched, you name it, top of the table, Champions League, clashes in the Europa League, in the Premier League title race and all these things. However, at the same time, too, I'm sure, Kyle, you're probably the same way as me, enthralled by the relegation battle. Kartik, you're more so on the all in on the relegation battle in terms of what why is that? Is it because it means more?
It's more interesting to me. I mean, Liverpool or Man City win the Premier League every year. Bayern wins the Bundesliga every year. Real Madrid or Barcelona or Atleti win La Liga every year. Serie A a little more interesting, truthfully, than the other leagues. But yeah, that's the reason. Plus, I'm very focused on lower divisions in England. So the Premier League matches have tended to conflict with, for example, Joey Barton's 7-goal heist for Bristol Rovers the other day, which I wanted to focus on, promotion from League 2 to League 1 and championship matches as well. So it's about priorities, right? It's not that I don't want to watch Liverpool or don't want to watch Man City or don't want to watch a Real Madrid. It's just that, you know, these matches all take place off relatively at the same time, and you have to prioritize what you watch and what you're interested in.
Yeah, it is interesting though too, because then our viewing choices are very different. I mean, I'm trying to watch as much as I can, but I think we all, listeners too, have to make choices. So there's so much options to choose from. Kyle, what about you? What's your area that you've been kind of concentrating more so on? If you had to pick one league or one team or one specific focus that's really captivating you?
In terms of captivating me, I think you guys are spot on with the relegation battle, especially in the Premier League. And Chris, we talked about this last week, how, you know, we're so focused on the Premier League compared to relegation battles in the other major European leagues. And over the last couple of weeks, just watching what Burnley's been able to do after sacking Dyche, just the uptick in form that they've had, watching Jesse Marsh, he's been struggling a little bit, but to be fair to him, playing against Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester City, not going to be favorable for him. Everton the same way, they've had an uptick in form, just like Burnley. It's just been a lot of drama there, and it's just each game's important, like the midweek games that we just saw yesterday and this past weekend, they're each one's important. Each one has a different impact, and the result, you know, it's unpredictable. I mentioned Everton, you know, being able to pull off a result against Chelsea. It just keeps you entertained because you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, too, because like sometimes, I'm not sure if you guys are the same way, too, but sometimes I'll tweet something out about Leeds United and get very little response. I can tweet something out about Liverpool and just people go crazy in terms of... It's one of those things. I mean, Liverpool at this point in time... probably one of the best Liverpool teams of all time, and they haven't won much yet this season. There's still a lot of things you've got the FA Cup final on Saturday, you've got the title race, which they're hanging on. I think right now it looks like it's going to be City that's going to win it. You got the Champions League, but arguably Liverpool, this team is one of the best Liverpool teams of all time, which says a lot in terms of how great they were in the 70s and 80s, early 80s especially. But then, I mean, the relegation battle is something still that does intrigue me too, because it is one of those things. It means so much, because a team staying up versus going down has a dramatic impact on that team. Leeds United is probably the best example here too, in terms of the struggles that they're going through. And Kyle, you mentioned too, just some of the games they've had recently, you mean against Chelsea and Arsenal, etc., that had some really difficult games. The schedule was not kind to Jesse Marsh by any means in terms of the way that these teams are lining up. But Kartik, if you could evaluate the situation and analyze the situation, what's going wrong here?
Well, I totally disagree, right? He got Watford and Norwich pretty quickly after he got the job. Okay, so to say that the fixtures have been unfriendly is really kind of very, very recency effect. And he won both those matches. They struggled to beat Norwich, by the way. So let's not forget that. They have not played particularly well under Marsh, except for, I would say, maybe from minute 60 on against Wolves. That whole match against Watford, they were pretty good. They were good at points in the Leicester match, which they lost. But what has gone wrong? Okay, so those of you who follow me on Twitter, and it seemed like my tweets created a storm. You can't say anything critical about any American. I get that. I've learned that the hard way many, many times. And Americans get ultra defensive about their own. And I'm a big Jesse Marsh fan, and I've been a big advocate of his for several years. But you just got to report what you're told and what you hear. And there are people in the UK who were actually kind of impressed by the refreshing nature of Marsh coming in, especially after Bielsa, who has a bit of a reputation of being a tyrant, being very, very ideologically pure to the point where training sessions are really regimented. It's a really strict, disciplined setup, and the tactical setup during matches is really regimented. And they do. Conte teams do a lot of running also. But what has been observed during this period, including the matches that they were getting results in, was that there seems to be very, very little wide play, very bad use of width, very poor sustained build-up play under Marsh, and a disproportionate number of injuries, which some of the people tell me have to do with the training methods changing and the specific training regimen they think that Marsh has implemented, which, in fairness to him, Bielsa's training is unlike anyone else's. So maybe quickly changing to a different setup creates these problems. And then a lack of discipline in the team. We saw that again yesterday with Dan James' early red card. So there is a concern that the team doesn't have the structure and the platform to build on to get the points they need and get through this relegation fight. And I have to say, the other complaint is that they thought that Bielsa's a legend, right? So it's tough to follow a legend, in fairness to Marsh. But the people I've spoken to also say that Marsh himself is pretty ideologically I wouldn't say an ideological zealot, but is very, there isn't much pragmatism to his setup. So there's one way of playing. It really depends on high pressing. It really depends on creating chances quickly after changes of possession, right? So if you're even in a position where you're maintaining possession and you have sustained build-up play, you're not creating the number of chances you need to, good chances. So the concern is, even in matches they were losing 6-0, 7-0 at the end under Bielsa, they were creating more good chances than they are at this point. We could go into a contrast on Frank Lampard, because I've been very impressed with what I've seen Lampard do with Everton. I watched them closely, so maybe other people haven't observed some of the things I've observed. We could do that, but maybe that's something the listeners aren't interested in. But I think Lampard has done a very good job, just real quickly. So that, in maximizing the individual talents of the players he inherited. Alex Iwobi is a great example. He's using him very differently than previous managers at Arsenal and Everton have used him. Same thing with Fabian Delph. So I think you're seeing maybe Marsh a little bit out of his depth. Granted, Leeds does not have the caliber of player Everton has, period. That's the bottom line. So may have been an easier job for Lampard.
Yeah, I think we have to be honest with ourselves. I mean, we all want Leeds United to do well this season, in terms of, especially for Jesse Marsh, because it means more than Jesse Marsh. It means really in terms of kind of the stigma against American coaches in England, particularly in terms of they get a bad rap, right? It is probably, if you go to any English person on the streets of London and say to them, "Hey, name some really good American coaches," they probably can't think of anyone. And Jesse Marsh is the only one right now. And he's a great coach. I mean, great pedigree, great background. But I'm going to ask both of you this question. So do you think Leeds United stays up? And do you think that Leeds United will still have Jesse Marsh in charge in August? Kyle, what do you think?
To the first question, I don't think Leeds will stay up, just because based on the way things are kind of shaping up for them and the form of Burnley, which I mentioned earlier, is kind of shocking, not only me, but I feel like a lot of people. I feel like Burnley and Everton, what they've been able to do over the last couple of weeks, just to kind of regain their form while Leeds is tapered off a little bit, going up against those tougher opponents. It just kind of put those two sides in a better position. Leeds, I thought Kartik was spot on there. You know, a lot's gone wrong for them, and some of that's, you know, they can control that, some of that they can't. But in general, it just hasn't really worked out for them. So I don't think Leeds will stay up. And you're right, Chris. I think that's a shame. That Jesse Marsh, I would like to see him in the Premier League next season. I don't know. I think it's hard to say if Jesse Marsh will be there next season. I think if he is there next season, he has a little more time to kind of develop his tactics and make that more gradual change from Bielsa over to Leeds' style of play. Even though they do share a lot of similarities, I think it will be a nice fit, being able to see maybe Leeds in the Premier League the following season after next season. But if I had to, you know, say an answer yes or no, is he going to be there? Just my intuition tells me no, because that's what I feel like a lot of teams do after they get relegated, is time for change.
Well, I said all along that I thought Burnley would stay up. I had assumed a couple of weeks ago that meant Everton was going down. I have a lot of faith in Burnley because they have veteran players. They have guys who've been through the grind a lot, guys who are experienced in English football specifically, both at the Championship and Premier League level. So I've always fancied them to stay up. I'm beginning to lose faith based on that Villa match the other day, and how even though they came from behind and rescued the match against Watford, how poorly they played for 80 minutes in that match. But I guess I'm still going to say, because I've said it all season, Burnley will stay up, which means Leeds goes down. I do think he stays on as manager, but here's the scenario. We've seen a lot of cases where clubs have been relegated from the Premier League. They've stuck with the manager. They've given the manager a summer to rebuild the squad. And then by October, it hasn't been going well in the Championship. They haven't been in the top two or the top three or the top four. And we've seen managers sacked. We even saw a few years ago, Darren Moore sacked at West Brom after he had taken them down, right? In a situation where they were sitting third or fourth in the table, they were going to be in the Championship playoffs. So I think he survives. I think he really has to get it right in the summer, and will only have a short period of time. And then in the Championship, when you talk about going to October, that's not seven matches like the Premier League. That's like 12 matches with the midweek fixture. Actually, this year it might be different, right, because of the World Cup. So maybe it's earlier. Maybe it's September that he gets sacked if things don't turn around. But he'll get about 10 to 12 matches next season.
What I find is interesting, guys, is that we're talking about relegation. And oftentimes when people mention pro-rel, they talk about all of the benefits of it and all the great things about it, how wonderful it is. I think in many ways, actually, the relegation part of pro-rel is more interesting than the promotion part of it. Especially when you look at the Championship, right? It's with the parachute payments. Oftentimes, the teams that go down from the Premier League are the teams that come back up the next season or a couple of seasons thereafter. And we've got Fulham and Bournemouth coming back into the Premier League. And there's always that third team that is, I mean, through the playoffs, who knows who it could be. And Kartik, you could probably talk for hours about Luton Town and Huddersfield and Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United and all the pros and cons of those teams and those players and managers. But I think it's the relegation part of it that makes pro-rel so exciting. Here we are, the three of us, talking about relegation. And that's the thing that keeps us, I mean, watching these games, the Burnleys, the Evertons, the Leeds Uniteds, just basically glued to those games. And yes, we're watching, I mean, most of us are watching, I mean, the race for the top four, the title race, you know, race for Europe. But mostly, oftentimes, it's the same teams battling for those same positions, just that the order is kind of mixed up. Kartik, what do you think?
Yeah, Chris, the one thing I want to point out about that is that, as I think our listeners know, I go on TalkSport at least once a week. Generally, recently, it's been like two or three times a week to talk about the Championship. And there is growing concern from TalkSport listeners and people who call in about parachute payments and how that's creating a discrepancy in the Championship, where what happened, what you just said, is happening too much in the Championship, which is that you have the teams that get the parachute payments payments come right back up. Two teams every year, you know which two, what two teams are going to probably get automatic promotion. And this year in the Premier League, the two teams that were automatically promoted from the Championship last season had been relegated from the Premier League the previous season and are finishing 19th in Premier League. So it's kind of a vicious cycle that a lot of supporters of other clubs now are getting angry about. And they weren't necessarily angry about it 4 or 5 years ago. So that's something to keep an eye on. It's also remarkable, though, that Brentford, we have to say, right, they're not a team that had ever been in the top, or had not been in the top flight in 60 years. They get promoted through the playoffs, and they're going to finish mid-table this season and have a lot to say about, actually, the rest of the relegation fight. Whereas these two teams that have been getting parachute payments and have been shooting up and down go right back down, and who finished ahead of them in the Championship last year. But yeah, to me, it's more interesting. It's just that's something to watch, Chris and Kyle. And again, it's not something I volunteered information about. It's being on TalkSport, hearing what the callers and the listeners and the hosts are interested in. That's a growing concern in the UK about promotion and relegation, is that teams that get relegated from the Premier League to the Championship have a built-in financial advantage. They're therefore kind of disenfranchising the rest of the Championship.
Yeah, lots of good games coming up in the coming weeks. We got the, I mean, Championship playoff games, League One, League Two, and those finals. Yeah, it's, for me, it's one of the best times of the year, the month of May, because also you have, I mean, Champions League, Europa League, etc., etc. Now, while the US does not have promotion relegation, it doesn't have a pyramid. It's kind of a mixture of all these different leagues at different levels, and it's a mess that I think we can all agree. One of the things that we do like a lot is the US Open Cup and the whole concept of it, in terms of, you mean, lower league clubs playing against major league clubs and major league soccer clubs. And this week we had the latest round of 32 in the US Open Cup. This time it was a little bit different. Kartik and Kyle, our prayers have been answered. We've said all along, I think for years really, that that tournament needs a whip-around show. Because there's so many games going on. Actually, even World Soccer Talk, we did some with Rabble many years ago. We did it with Daniel Feuerstein. We did a whip-around show covering all the games. And we finally got it on Wednesday night, and that was courtesy of Football America's show on ESPN Plus with Hercules Gomez and Sebastian Salazar. And it was good. It was great. However, there were no upsets. I think that's the thing we're missing, is like, okay, it's great to have a whip around show and see all these stadiums from around the country. Some of them are lower level stadiums, of course. The teams weren't able to cause any upsets, and I think that's the part that's missing. I'll go to you, Kartik, just because you're kind of the expert on lower league soccer, but you know, I mean, is there any hope for change in the future where these lower division sides are more likely to cause some upsets in the round of 32 in the future?
No, I mean, although I've been involved with two lower division sides that have made the quarterfinals, right, of the tournament. I mean, when I was with Fort Lauderdale, we were able to advance past DC United, beat Orlando in Orlando, and then get to the quarterfinals and lose to Chicago. So it happens from time to time. Obviously, Miami FC also, remember their run the following year. But I think it's getting rarer and rarer, partly because there's a greater discrepancy now because MLS keeps expanding. And so those players that were elite players at the NASL or USL level, or even at the Division III level, are now being lobbed off with MLS expansion. And so the gap and the USL continues to grow, and NISA continues to grow as it goes on. So the gap has widened. I do think that the cool part of a whip-around show, and you mentioned Daniel, and he deserves full credit. He's the one who kind of invented this idea. Really is good in the first and second rounds when you have a lot of amateur teams, you have a lot of teams people aren't familiar with, and you have a ton of upsets in the first and second round every year. Yeah, I love the fact that Seb and Herc were able to get this done. It's just maybe they would have wished to have started earlier in the tournament. I know they probably would have wished to have started earlier in the tournament. But it's significant buy-in from ESPN, right, to do this, which lends the question of the rights. We've talked about this over and over again, guys. USSF has done a deal with Turner Sports, with Warner Media, for the future, which includes, at least in theory, U.S. Open Cup rights. But ESPN has shown this season that they can promote the product. And secondly, the production levels, which are not controlled by ESPN, by the way, which the Federation has invested in. And there's a new U.S. Open Cup commissioner this season, Mr. Applegate, replacing Merstatter, who had been the commissioner previously. So there's been a kind of a refocus on producing good Open Cup related content from the Federation, which includes higher production levels for the broadcast. Look, very familiar, right, to the FA Cup broadcast. I think they kind of copied it, to be honest with you. But that's fine. That's fine.
But the concern is for me at least, is that, so we know that ESPN Plus doesn't have the rights next year. Then if Seb and Herc do another whip around show, Goldcast is what they're calling it, in the next round, which is great. However, I don't have a lot of interest in watching the rest
of
the tournament.
Right. Once it's down to MLS teams, I don't watch it. I'll be honest. Even though people perceive me as a big advocate of this competition, which I am from my lower division background, I tend to tune out from the quarterfinals on, and it's because it's always some MLS team that wins it, and it's just like a self-contained competition of MLS teams. It's not terribly exciting from that point on. But the question is, does the Federation think about maybe doing a separate deal of Turner's Not Interested with ESPN, because they did such a good job with this?
Yeah, and it seems that Turner Sports isn't that interested in the U.S. Open Cup, so much so that they didn't even mention it in the press release. And we had to be one of the first ones to report that actually that was part of the deal. We had to confirm.
Yeah, you had to ask. You had to ask them directly, Chris.
I know. They didn't even know they had it, and they didn't mention it, and we found out and we reported it. So it does not look good for the future in terms of next year, unless they've had a kind of an awakening and they're like, oh wow, okay, this is actually something, we can turn this into something worthwhile. All right, so looking ahead to this this weekend, Kyle, I'll go to you in a minute, but in terms of matches to watch this weekend, I'm going for the easy one. It's an easy one, but it's going to be an incredible one, I think. The FA Cup final, Liverpool against Chelsea on Saturday, 11:45 Eastern time on ESPN Plus. And I believe Klopp has never won the FA Cup. This will give Liverpool an opportunity to get their second trophy this season. They've already got the League Cup. And this one's a little bit funny, I think, because the start time is a little bit strange. 11:45 Eastern time on a Saturday. Why is that? Well, it's because of the Eurovision Song Contest, which is this annual event that happens in Europe where they have all these amateur singers from around Europe that compete in this song contest. And it's a massive deal. It's such a massive deal that the BBC in England is broadcasting it live to millions of people. So the timing of that event means that this is why the Liverpool-Chelsea game kicks off a little bit earlier.
But why is it on May 14th? So I remember this is the day, actually, Saturday, May 14th, Man City won their first trophy in 35 years when they won the FA Cup in 2011. But that was also an odd one. And the reason that season was that the Champions League final was at Wembley. But this season, the Champions League final is not at Wembley. So why is this match being played on May 14th?
That I don't know. But I don't know. That's probably a Wembley question, right? As far as, I don't know.
Yeah, they must have booked another event, I guess.
Must be like a concert or something. Elton John, who knows, on his tour. Probably, right? All right, Kyle, let's move to you. So I've got FA Cup final. What's your game to watch this weekend?
So we talk about the relegation battles and the title races. I think earlier we said the Premier League's just about wrapped up, with Liverpool trailing by 3 points now, but one that is on the verge of being wrapped up is over in Italy, and Milan plays Atalanta this weekend on Sunday at noon Eastern, and it's an important game, not just because of the title race. Like I said, Milan, they currently have a 2-point lead over Inter in the league, and there's two games remaining, so say a win here pretty much puts them on the cusp. Can guarantee it if Inter drops points this weekend, but equally important in Serie A is Atalanta. And Chris, you and I talked about the logjam of teams that are vying for European competition next season in Serie A, and I'm looking at the table right now. There's Roma, Fiorentina, and Atalanta are all tied on 59 points, and Lazio is just ahead of them on 62, and each of these teams has two games remaining, excuse me. And so there's two European spots up for grabs here, and we're used to seeing Atalanta over the last couple of seasons in the Champions League. I think in 2020 it was, they were in the quarterfinals, and they were 2 minutes away from the semifinals, having a PSG knock them out with that weird dramatic comeback at the end of the game. So this game between Milan and Atalanta is important for the title, it's important for the European qualification. It's just got all your makings for what, in my opinion, has been the best league to watch from top to bottom when it comes to title race, European qualification, and a relegation battle too.
Yeah, and I think CBS and Paramount Plus have done a really, really good job of covering this league this season. Mm-hmm. Certainly a step up, I think. And ESPN did great too, but this is a major step up from beIN Sports to ESPN to now CBS and Paramount Plus. Kartik, what about you? What's your match to watch this weekend?
That's a really good one from Kyle, by the way. And Atalanta have, I think now Gasperini is dealing with the fact that they have sold too many guys. And the second half of the season hasn't gone well for them. I'm going for right before the FA Cup final on ESPN Plus. This is also an odd start time for a playoff semifinal on a Saturday, which generally you don't have playoff semifinals. But it is Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest, the first leg of the championship playoff semifinal. Forest under Steve Cooper have been fantastic, except in that game against Bournemouth, which unfortunately I had a meeting and I missed, but I understand they look like they had set up to try and nick a 1-0 win, which is very un-Steve Cooper-like, but I didn't see that match. Other than that, they've been fantastic, although they had the chance to go up directly if they had won that match. Now they play a Sheffield United team that has gotten better as the season has gone on, a team that still has a core of players that finished whatever, 8th or 9th, something like that, in the Premier League 2 seasons ago. So really good matchup here, and I'd recommend folks watch it. Huddersfield-Luton, by the way, quick plug for that. That's the other semifinal. Luton has overachieved under Nathan Jones this season. Great story. I do think Huddersfield probably make easy work of them in that in those two legs, though.
Yeah, there is nothing better than seeing some of these championship playoffs. I mean, yes, there's Champions League, World Cup, and all these other things too, but these games mean so much to the fans of, say, Nottingham Forest. It's been over 20 years since they've been in the Premier League. A lot of heartache over the years. And then Sheffield United, of course, have been in the Premier League pretty recently, but very much a yo-yo club in terms of, you know, I mean, doing well, but then back down again and vice versa. For these fans, this means everything. This means the whole city of Sheffield, the whole city of Nottingham will be focused on this game, as would Huddersfield and Luton. All right, let's move on to TV streaming news. We've got an interesting mix this week. First up is a comment from one of our regular listeners, JP. And he noticed something this week in Wall Street Journal that I thought I'd share. And JP says, Fox Corporation won't use its portfolio of live sports to boost its streaming platforms, Chief Executive Lachlan Murdoch said on a call with analysts to discuss quarterly results this week. Many of Fox's, and this is coming from the Wall Street Journal, many of Fox's competitors, including Paramount and NBC Universal, are offering live sports on their respective streaming services, Paramount Plus and Peacock, to attract more subscribers. Mr. Murdoch said that for Fox, such an approach would damage the significant distribution revenues it gets for its broadcast and cable channels. So to me, this says, hey, Fox, we're all in on TV, on cable. We're going to max that out for as much as we can. We're kind of primitive. We're a little bit of the dodo bird. We're kind of way back. We're not looking to the future. We're not looking to streaming. But Kartik, what does this say for their soccer rights? I mean, what do you think about this?
Yeah, so first off, as someone who's just recently read a biography or an analysis of the Murdoch brothers, I realize this very much is Lachlan Murdoch, because his brother James Murdoch, who's no longer involved with the family business and actually was hoping to get a seat on the Disney board when that transaction took place, was very much an advocate of streaming and using streaming as a gateway to bring customers in, which is why that brother aligned more with the Disney vision than with his own father and brother's vision for Fox, hence part of the reason he's out of, among other reasons, out of the family business. So this very much sounds like Lachlan Murdoch, so I'm not surprised based on what I've read about him recently, but I think it's the wrong approach. I think that they are now limiting their ability to compete in what is now becoming the newest form of media. And it's really interesting from this company because they've been on the cutting edge of everything for the last 50 years. They were on the cutting edge of buying tabloid newspapers in the UK and exploiting that tabloid audience. They were on the cutting edge of creating that sort of brand with the New York Post when they bought that and changed that paper completely here. They were on the cutting edge of creating provocative primetime content with the Fox network. And then they were on the cutting edge of creating a conservative news network with Fox News and changed the way sports was covered in this country with the way they broadcast the NFL in particular, but also other sporting events, including soccer. So they've been on the cutting edge for 50 years, the Murdoch family. This is very much them holding on to the stuff they've created and not realizing that the world is continuing to evolve. It's kind of surprising when you think about their history, but it also makes sense when you read what I've read recently about Lachlan versus James Murdoch, and Lachlan is not an advocate of using streaming to bolster the core product. He wants the core product to remain the core product.
So it's interesting, though, too, because this makes a lot of sense in terms of how Fox has been treating soccer rights. So, for example, them acquiring the rights to the European Championships, a lot of big tournaments, they've acquired the rights to Copa America, they have a Gold Cup, they have the World Cup, and pretty much everyone knows right now that they're not that interested in Major League Soccer to renew the rights deal that's coming up this year. So this makes sense in terms of going after the big ones, the big games, the big tournaments that people will watch on television primarily, and then the kind of the niche sports, so to speak, in terms of all the games are covered on streaming, they're not interested in as much. However, and I think in many ways too, they're looking for partners. So, like, for example, the European Championships. So Euro 2024 is going to be on Fox Sports. Not every single game, though. So all the major games will be on Fox Sports, but the lesser games, so maybe it's, Albania against Wales as one example, that's going to be on Fubo TV. So they've partnered with Fubo TV, and Fubo's going to have the rights to the games that are going to be less attractive. But still, if you're from Albania or from Wales, that game means so much to you. But numbers-wise, it's not going to be as great as the TV numbers. But yeah, it's interesting. This definitely does give us a better indication of what they're going after and why they wouldn't be interested in MLS ratings, because MLS renewal, just because the numbers aren't there. The numbers aren't producing probably the revenue that they're looking for. All right, so we're going to skip and go to talking about a breakup, a divorce. EA Sports is splitting up with FIFA. They're no longer going to have... EA Sports is not going to be producing the FIFA video game anymore. They will produce a video game. It's going to be called EA Sports FC. And FIFA then is going out and going, I'm sure, talking to Konami and a whole bunch of other companies out there about maybe developing a different game with a FIFA name on it. Kyle, are you a video gamer on the FIFA?
I got a big love-hate relationship with FIFA. I've been playing it since FIFA 10. And I got really good at it in FIFA 15 and 16, and then the game just broke too many controllers. I'm not going to blame myself because those goals that I conceded were definitely not my fault. But it's bittersweet to see this news about EA and FIFA splitting up, because I saw Kartik tweeted out that FIFA, the video games, is such a driving force for soccer in this country. I go talk to my friends who don't watch soccer, and I say, when you hear FIFA, what do you think about? And the first thing they'll say is, oh, the video game that some of my friends play. And obviously us in the soccer world, when we hear FIFA, we're going to think about the world governing body for soccer. But in the U.S. especially, when soccer is such a growing sport and it's in its developmental, developmental stage, I think is a fair word to say. It's been growing. FIFA has driven what the general public's understanding, especially the youth's understanding of the game, because it's an easy way to learn players, learn leagues, learn how the game works, and you can have fun doing it unless you get good at it, and then it gets frustrating. FIFA's been a big part of me growing up. It was the game I played after middle school, after high school, whenever I would get home. So it's big news. I think this doesn't really impact the way the game works outside of, you know, its marketing. I think the biggest change will be the fact that EA's version will no longer have the World Cup, which they only got ahead of the 2018 World Cup, or got back in the game ahead of the 2018 World Cup. So they'll still have access to a lot of leagues. I'm sure this will change their agreements with things like the Premier League. I mean, we saw PES have to call certain Premier League sides like London Red or London Blue for Arsenal and Chelsea, respectively. I'm interested to see how that's going to play out, because FIFA for a long time has had the biggest, you know, rights for leagues, rights for teams, and players included in that. So I'm interested to see where that plays out from here. But bittersweet, as I said.
All right, Kartik, what's your take on this?
Yeah, so it's two different audiences, right? In the U.S., I think it's a very big deal. And as I said, and I tweeted and got 160,000 views or something for the tweet, which was crazy, given it was about a video game. You know, if it's about something more substantial, I can see that. But I think it is the biggest driver. I think it's been a bigger driver than MLS or U.S. soccer. The Federation likes to think they've driven all the interest in the sport in this country. They haven't. I think it's been a bigger driver than the Premier League, even than World Cups, because World Cups you see people watch and then they drop off for a couple of years. So it's hugely significant. Now, will EA continue to have that market of young people as a gateway with the new EA Sports FC? That's a good question. Now, this has been coming, right? I mean, the announcement to me was a fait accompli. I'd heard it was going to happen a year ago, and it didn't happen, right? And I think you guys had probably heard the same thing. This was a divorce a long time in coming. And EA, from what I'm told, and this is, I don't know the FIFA side of it, but the EA side of it, they actually think it improves their marketability in Europe. Because there is a stigma about the FIFA brand in Western Europe right now. And so kind of keeping EA Sports FC, assuming they can keep all their league licenses, which I think they will, but with that assumption, they think that they might be able to position the game in a stronger position versus PES, you know, the Konami game and other games in the market in Western Europe. In the U.S., though, maybe it creates a free-for-all. Maybe if Konami secures a FIFA license or someone else secures a FIFA. There's someone who has a FIFA Pro license, right, but not a FIFA license. Is that Konami or is that someone else? I'm not sure. But if someone else, whoever has the FIFA Pro license gets the FIFA license as well, so they have the real players and they have the FIFA license, then you've got a real battle in North America. But in Western Europe, I'm told, and again, I will concede its spin that has been personally delivered to me with a deliberate intent, probably for me to say it on this podcast and on Twitter in this manner. There are elements at EA who think it wasn't worth to kind of pay more for FIFA, and it may be more worthwhile from their marketability in Western Europe to break with FIFA because of the stigma around that organization.
Yeah, I think this is not good news for EA or FIFA, because I think it's, I mean, like Kyle mentioned, and we've heard this for years, right, in terms of FIFA, the video game, and all the problems it's had, whether it's been the servers been down or buggy or just like not as good as it normally would have been in the past. And also in terms of every year, the changes weren't that great. It wasn't like they would always tout, okay, we've changed the engine, it's going to be incredible, it's going to be faster, and oftentimes the reality didn't match the hype. The hype was much greater before. And then at the same time, I think FIFA being greedy at this point and wanting far more money from EA to have their name associated with this video game, I mean, they really need EA. I mean, EA needs FIFA for this partnership to work really well. And I have concerns about EA Sports FC I mean, the name is so bland, so flat, so uninspiring. But maybe, I mean, maybe the issues that they have, maybe removing the FIFA name, maybe they'll sell more copies of it. We'll see. And then FIFA, meanwhile, who knows? I mean, they're looking for, I'm sure, a partner, a video game company out there that is going to go ahead and give them everything they want financially. And the product may suffer. I mean, the product might be, maybe it's Konami, maybe it's somebody else coming up with a product that's going to be not as good because EA is not driving that, at least from the early stages. We'll have to wait and see. But this is big breakup, a big divorce. It's messy, and not Lionel Messi, but it's messy. And then in a couple of years, we'll see. You know, it'll be a split, and we'll see EA Sports FC on the shelves. So this is something, Kartik, that I know that you're going to hate. We haven't even discussed this. We haven't even mentioned this to you. So, Kyle, I'll probably have to lean on you for this one a little bit too, because I know what Kartik's take is going to be. But UEFA this week went ahead and announced their plans to enhance, in their words, the UEFA Champions League. So beginning in 2024... it's going to be quite different than what it is currently. And currently, you have the group stages and knockout stages, etc. So UEFA has agreed to ditch the coefficient plan, and then from 2024, will award two Champions League places to the two countries whose clubs perform best in Europe that season. So, for example, this season, I think it's it's got to be England and Spain who are doing the best.
It's England and Holland.
Oh, you're right. England and Holland. So what they would do is then in the Premier League, if it started now, which is not starting now, if it started now, then probably Manchester United, or depending on where West Ham ends up, but Manchester United or another club will get into the UEFA Champions League because England's been doing so well in that competition. Primarily Man City and Liverpool kind of running away into the deeper stages of the tournament. However, so this plan, this new plan that's going to start, it's been agreed 2024 for the UEFA Champions League, is going to have no group phase. It will resemble more of a league table, but without every club playing each other. 8 matches guaranteed for every club. The fixtures will be determined via a seeding system. And then the top 8 qualify for the knockout stages. And then teams 9 through 12 will compete in two-legged playoffs for a place in the last 16. And then these changes are going to happen also in the Europa League and in the UEFA Europa Conference League. So, Kartik, I'm not going to go to you yet, but Kyle, what's your take so far on just these initial bullet points in terms of the main changes to this, what they're calling the Swiss model? What's your take on this?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the whole thing. From my initial perspective, it seems a lot like what the Europa League does at the cut when the certain Champions League teams come down and certain Europa League teams go down to the Conference League. I think the thing that took the most attention for me from this was the fact that, as you mentioned, England will have an extra spot pretty much in the Champions League. And I read somewhere that there is legitimate potential, not like a likelihood this will happen, but there is a real possibility that 7 English teams could be in one Champions League season. It would require the Champions League winner and the Europa League winner to both finish 6th and 7th in the Premier League, and the top 5 Premier League teams would go through the Champions League. That's a crazy possibility, but I think one official from UEFA said it's like a meteorite hitting this very room or something. He has some crazy comment on that. I'm still trying to understand how it's all going to work. I mean, I think this is a way for UEFA to try and, you know, minimize some of the European Super League. You know, hey, look at England, you're going to get another spot. I'm sure the transfer of which team performs best in Europe that season will help, a club in Spain and Italy and France, whatever it may be. But I'm still trying to get my bearings in terms of what it all means. I do think it's interesting the fact that there's no determined group phase. They say they're going to determine the fixtures based on a seeding system, so I'm curious to see how that's going to work, who's going to play who. I think whenever UEFA or FIFA try to make comparisons between teams that are in different countries, it's always so challenging because it's like comparing Ligue 1 to the Premier League, that they're very different competitions. So just curious to see how it's all going to play out. Like you mentioned, it's going to start in 2024, so we still have one more or two more, I can't do the math right now in my head, but you know, a couple more seasons of the current Champions League structure. So I don't know. It's going to be weird when it starts for sure.
All right, Kartik, unleash your negativity about this one. You have to hate this, right?
Oh, okay. Not totally, because a few things. One, this is a compromise. It was originally supposed to be a 10-team, 10 matches guaranteed for every club, and that is part of what triggered the Super League. Let's not forget that, because you were adding two more additional games and additional access for other clubs with that original Swiss model proposal, which never got formalized, but the big clubs knew about it because they were in on the discussion. So this is a bit of a compromise. I love getting rid of the group phase. The group phase is a waste of time for me. The listeners probably know this by now, and 99% of you think I'm weird and not really a football fan because of this, but I sit and watch Bournemouth versus Stoke at the same time as Champions League group stage games are on, and I am watching football. I'm just watching the championship or Coppa Italia match or something, you know, something else going on, because I hate the group stage of the Champions League. I do like the fact that you're going to see 1 through 8 coming out, and that much I think is progress. What I don't think is progress is that you still have a 16-team knockout phase. It should be 4 teams or 8 teams. It should be the best of the best. Secondly, I don't like the extension of 5th-place teams, potentially 6th-place teams getting in. This is a Champions League. And already we have a current champion of Europe in Chelsea who has not finished, has not come close to winning the Premier League title in 5 seasons. They haven't finished outside higher than 3rd in the last 5 seasons, yet they're the champions of Europe and the champions of the world because of the World Club Cup. So remember, this is a cup competition. This is not actually a Champions League. And the other thing I don't like is, and I continue to not like, is that you get a double jeopardy, basically. You get forgiveness. Teams that drop out of the Champions League and teams that drop out of the Europa League shouldn't get a second chance in Europa League and Conference League. I think they should be out. And they have not changed that, which I thought they might change with these reforms. So I'm disappointed by that. I get that has to do with TV revenue. For example, Barcelona this year. Every year there's one of those teams out of Champions League, right? Man United, Barcelona, whoever, that fall. And for TV purposes, you want to keep them alive in European competition if you're UEFA. So I understand the reasoning why, but I don't like it from a competitive standpoint. But I do have to say this is probably more appealing to me than the current Champions League. I'm not saying I love it. I don't at all. But the current Champions League holds mm-hmm. no interest to me. So I think there's some positives here.
I'm surprised, Kartik, because I think that this is a step backwards. I think this is really what this is the European Super League. It's a different name. It's going to be still called the Champions League, but this is the European Super League. You've got seeding of teams so that you can guarantee that, you mean, Juventus and Real Madrid and all these heavyweights are going to play lesser teams. You also have it so that not every single team is playing each other. So it guarantees a way for the major clubs to still maintain control, if anything, actually more than maintain control, actually kind of maximize that control. And then also, too, you have a kind of a safety latch. So in terms of a team that may not do well that season, if, like, say, the Italian clubs do really well in Europe and Juventus and AC Milan do really well, then you've got kind of a backdoor for, say, I don't know, Lazio or somebody to get into the league by finishing, say, I don't know, 4th or 5th. Same thing with Manchester United this season. They've had a horrible season, but if this plan was in place for this coming up the season in 2022-23, it gives Manchester United an opportunity to get into the Champions League because of Liverpool, Man City. I mean,
I don't even like top four. That's my issue with the current Champions League, is that teams that finish 3rd and 4th in their league are winning Europe and are called champions of Europe. The Chelsea example sticks out for me because they have not finished in the top two in the Premier League since the 2016-2017 season, yet they're champions of Europe. So I totally buy that, Chris. I agree with you. So I guess overall I have to dislike it more than I like it, because it's maybe giving a gateway for more of those teams, right? Like, well, Kyle laid out, there's a scenario where the 7th-place team in the Premier League could make this competition.
Well, the strange thing, though, too, is that with this You mean in terms of the factors of the countries that have the teams that go the furthest in the competitions, then getting extra places? In UEFA's mind, that encourages, say, fans of Manchester United to cheer for Liverpool and Man City and hope they go really, really far. But the reality is that would never happen, right?
That's a great point.
You mean?
Yeah. I mean, that forces Liverpool fans to root. It forces Man United fans to root for Liverpool. I mean, I guarantee you. I think you nailed it with that. That's the winning point. I have nothing to come back at that with, because that is ridiculous. What do you think about that?
All right. One more thing before we go on to the listener mailbag, and that's the Premier League has signed a deal with IMG to extend the Premier League Productions contract. So, listeners, if you're ever watching Peacock. And oftentimes the games that there are there, oftentimes you may have a pre-game or halftime or post-match. Sometimes that's from Premier League Productions, as is the Premier League TV channel that you get through Peacock. And now and again, NBC Sports will show you some coverage from Premier League Productions in terms of maybe pitchside reporters or other things. But for the most part, most of that content is through Peacock, and you don't get access to everything, but you do get access to some stuff. Kartik, I saw on Twitter, I think this morning, that you were, I guess, not that enthusiastic about this from what you've been watching this past week.
No, yeah, I've noticed the level of Premier League Productions, I think, in some of the analysis has slipped the last, I wouldn't say just the last week, the last month or so, and to the point where I've, and maybe it's just me, so don't take it to the bank, I've started watching Sky a lot again, which I know I've said previously on this podcast, annoys me, and even some talk sport to get my morning fix, because basically every morning I wake up, I have to take my niece to school, but I'm up early, so I'm checking out what's going on in the Premier League. Maybe this is what's made me more English football focused this season than previous seasons, but I'm checking out usually that Premier League channel on Peacock. What I've ended up doing the last week or two is more of talk sport and Sky Sports in the morning to get my daily update and my daily fix.
Yeah, we didn't plan this either, but the same thing's happened to me, Kartik, because like from the last, I'd say the last probably 2 months or so, for pre-match coverage, I haven't been watching NBC Sports for the most part, so I've been tuning in to BBC Radio 5 Live, for the pre-match discussion, analysis, the build-up to games. Sometimes Talk Sports, but more often BBC Radio 5 Live, and also Premier League Productions. So on Peacock, when they've had pregame, or the Premier League TV channel, I'm just kind of really burnt out on NBC's coverage. I think it has dropped a lot this season. I think, I don't know if it's budget cuts or whatever, but it is not as good. There's been a lot of more recaps. Like, for example, the one example, Leeds United against Chelsea on Wednesday. Incredible first half in this game. So much happened in this first half. So at halftime, watching this on Peacock, NBC Sports goes ahead and plays a pre-recorded segment about Liverpool and Aston Villa and the highlights from that game. And then you're back to the match. There was not one word mentioned about Leeds United against Chelsea.
And NBC did not even do a pregame show for this. That match kicked off at 2:30 Eastern time. Sorry, guys, I have to vent about this because I was really angry about it yesterday, because that was the game I was focused on at that time slot. And they didn't start NBC coverage till 3 Eastern. So you didn't even get the bonus coverage you typically get in the past on USA or on the dearly departed NBCSN. You got nothing. It was shocking, honestly. So this is why I think you and I, Chris, are seeking out alternative sources of Premier League news. And unfortunately, in this specific case now, Premier League Productions is dropping off IMG Premier League Productions, and now we're forced to find BBC 5 Live and Sky and listen to them.
Yeah, I would actually argue that Premier League Productions is not so bad, but... I'm still not getting my fix from it, though. I mean, there's definitely some good things about it, and we can talk about it in a future podcast, but there are some things that they do that are really, really good that are worth seeking out. Again, most of it through Peacock. All right, let's move on. Listener mailbag. First up, about CONCACAF Champions League. Dave says, I enjoyed your data about English language ratings for the CONCACAF Champions League final. The Seattle market is about 2% of the US and drew about 60% of the viewers. This suggests the English broadcast was 50 to 100 times more popular per capita in Seattle than in the rest of the United States. If FS1 drove 25% of Seattle's enthusiasm nationwide, they would have had about 2 million viewers. Chris says, "Hi guys, as a Seattle Sounders supporter, I want to say that I totally agree with your view about the Sounders winning the CONCACAF Champions League. This is a massive deal for us as a club and MLS overall. When it comes to getting tickets for the Club World Cup, I am definitely putting my name on the waiting list the moment they go on sale. As for the Conference League, at first I thought it was going to be a lower tier competition." This is the UEFA Conference League. "But I have pleasantly been surprised by the quality of play and the atmosphere in the stadiums. It's definitely up there with the Europa League and Champions League as important European competition." Roberto says, "In the podcast last week, the English language viewers for the CONCACAF Champions League final were mentioned, and they were poor. It was acknowledged that the Spanish language numbers were better, but no actual numbers were provided. They were high and brought the totals to 1.4 million for the first game and 1.5 million for the second. This does look good for the upcoming League's Cup. On the topic of promotion relegation and our fascination with it, Jason says, Norwich City and Watford stink. They really do. I don't see them getting immediate promotion back next year. Yo-yo clubs annoy the hell out of me. But whomever of Everton, Leeds United or Burnley gets relegated, you can say there is not a single league on the planet where they would get relegated from other than the English Premier League." Dave says, "Interesting comment and discussion about relegation interest in the Premier League. Your arguments of a greater connection and familiarity with the Premier League team seems plausible. Using 538, every team in the Premier League, even Norwich City, is of higher quality than both CONCACAF Champions League finalists. Premier League relegation battles feature teams that would be in the mix for a good playoff run in Liga MX or MLS. Same for La Liga and Bundesliga. So is not the only factor driving Premier League relegation interest." A lot to take in there. Kartik, any thoughts? I know you're an expert on the championship.
I go to the 538 a lot, actually, to look at that soccer power index. And I don't know if – so Dave is right. He's exactly right in what he's saying. I don't know how much stock to put in it. But it is intriguing because based on that SPI, a lot of championship clubs are ahead of MLS clubs, which I tend to agree with. But then you have, I think, the added dynamic that according to that SPI, teams that are in the relegation zone in the Premier League are ahead of mid-table clubs and other top divisions in Europe, which is, I think, kind of questionable. But we have some people in the mailbag who think Norwich is better than the seventh place team in the Netherlands. And I'm not sure about that, right? I mean, this has been a back and forth for many years, even with people who like to critique the Bundesliga. Since I like the Bundesliga, come at me and tell me Norwich is better than the third place team in the Bundesliga, which I think is ridiculous. I had that direct comment recently that someone commented at me Norwich would finish in a Champions League place in the Bundesliga, which I think is absurd. But if you look at the Soccer Power Index on 538, it's like Norwich, Watford, they would be competing for European places in a lot of leagues. So I don't know how much stock to put in it.
Yeah, and it's a one-off game, and it is a cup competition, but Rangers beating RB Leipzig over two legs was eye-opening. And that's something I would not have expected.
Same thing. Eintracht, though, is like is much closer to the relegation zone in Germany than to the top four.
Very true.
And they beat West Ham, and they beat Barcelona.
Very true. Speaking of Barcelona, Kyle, so what about you? Like, do you put any weight in the Soccer Power Index or similar indexes to kind of rate teams?
No, I don't think so. I think I said earlier, I don't like comparing teams from different countries and different leagues just because we have no idea what that's going to look like. I think it's funny what Kurt's talking about, how some people think Norwich would be in a European spot in the Bundesliga. It's pretty crazy to think about. And I think they're so far, they are the worst team in the Premier League. But no, in terms of those, you know, things like 538, you know, I don't put too much power into them. Don't really look at them too much. I'm more of a results-based guy and what I see on the field.
All right. Well, speaking of power, listeners, you have the power to send in your questions, your comments, your feedback, anything you disagree or agree with us about, things that speak to you in regards to the things we talk about each week, which is oftentimes soccer media, commentating, the viewing experience, streaming, relegation, promotion, teams, going for the titles, etc. So go ahead and send in your comments, questions, and feedback to web@worldsoccertalk.com via email, facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, Twitter is twitter.com/worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can also go to the World Soccer Talk website, and we have a podcast thread there, and you can post your comments in the section there, and we'd love to hear from you. All right, listeners, heading into another weekend of football. Don't forget, Sunday we also have the Women's FA Cup final. Saturday's the FA Cup final. Title race in Italy and in England. Championship playoffs. And Liga MX playoffs also. There's so much going on. Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.